Welcome back to our Claritas U course on abortion. Now, in this lesson, we're going to focus on some of the most common and most powerful pro-choice objections. We've actually handled some objections already in this course and some of the previous lessons, but I want to specifically devote this whole lesson to some of the top objections. So let's dive right in. Here's the first major objection. A woman should decide what she does with her body. Nobody should tell her how to choose. Now, on the face of it, this sounds pretty obvious. Our bodies don't belong to anyone else, other than God, of course. So nobody should tell us what to do with our bodies. But here's the problem. This assumes that abortion involves only one body, namely the mother's. However, if there's one thing scientists universally agree on, it's that the fetus is a distinct living organism. It has unique DNA, different from that of its mother's. And so while it's true that during pregnancy, the fetus is attached to the mother and depends on the mother for its development, it's definitely not part of her body. It's a different body within her body. In other words, abortion doesn't involve one body. It involves two bodies, the mother's body and the body of the unborn child. So while we can agree that in most cases, a woman should decide what she does with her body, we just can't agree that she can do whatever she wants with somebody else's body, namely the fetus's body. It's always wrong to use your body to harm or destroy an innocent person's body. Here's a second common objection. Many of these kids will be born into poverty or abusive households. Their lives will be miserable. So how could you force them into such a world? Well, this is where our trot out the toddler strategy is so helpful. It's the perfect analogy because millions of toddlers who are already born exist right now in awful situations, whether in terrible poverty, abusive families, or with little hope of advancement. Since their lives are miserable and they have little hope of escaping, should we just kill them? Of course not. No sensible person would choose that option because we know that murdering poor toddlers is unthinkable. But if that's true, then we shouldn't kill poor unborn children either. In fact, we have even stronger reason not to kill unborn children because they only potentially will be raised in bad situations, while many born children already actually live in bad situations. So if we wouldn't kill poor and miserable born children, if we would instead work to help them rise above their poverty and difficulties, we should do the same for unborn children. Just remember this general principle. Killing someone is never a way to solve their problems, period. Whether they're a fetus, a toddler, or an elderly person, murdering them is just never the solution. Here's a third common objection. We need abortion because otherwise we won't be able to care for these children when the world is overpopulated. Now, here are a couple things to keep in mind when it comes to this objection. First, overpopulation is simply a myth. If you want the full scoop, go to the website overpopulationisamyth.com. The fact is, especially in the Western world, in America, Canada, and much of Europe, we're not facing overpopulation. In fact, we have the opposite problem, underpopulation. Did you know that our birth rates in America are the lowest that have ever been recorded? We're simply not replacing our population. We're shrinking. Sociologists tell us that the optimal replacement rate to keep your population just stagnant is 2.1 births per woman. That's the average number in order to keep the population steady, 2.1 births per woman. But right now, America averages 1.8 births per woman in childbearing age. In other words, we're not having enough babies to replace those of us who are dying. So abortion is a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. We're not in danger of overpopulation. We're in danger of underpopulation. We need more babies, not less. But suppose, just for the sake of argument, that overpopulation was a serious threat. Well, how should you respond then? Here's a strategy I like from my friend Trent Horn. He recommends saying this to the objector. You know, when it comes to population dynamics, there are generally two types of people, givers and takers. The givers include people like scientists or political leaders who contribute knowledge and ingenuity that can help us solve the overpopulation problem. They can help us grow food more efficiently or create affordable housing for more people. But then you have the takers, and these include people such as the homeless, the severely disabled, or people in prison. In most cases, these people consume far more resources than they contribute. But if that's the case, and if overpopulation is a serious threat, then shouldn't we kill all the homeless, the severely disabled, prisoners, and others who only consume resources and give nothing back? Shouldn't they be the first to go? Then, only after we've killed all of them, can we reassess and decide if we also need to kill the unborn, since the unborn are innocent, and they could grow up to be either givers or takers. We just don't know yet. Now, hopefully, the other person will say, well, no, of course we should not kill the homeless and the sick and those in prison just to ease overpopulation. But if that's the case, then they have even less reason to kill the unborn to prevent overpopulation. So use that strategy from Trent Horn, which he covers in more depth in his great book, Persuasive Pro-Life. Okay, here's a fourth common objection. Stop trying to force your moral and religious views on everyone else. First of all, let's be very clear here. Opposing abortion is not a religious issue. Do not let the pro-choice person shut you down by writing you off as a religious extremist. Make it clear that your pro-life views have nothing to do with your religious beliefs, and you would still stand against the killing of unborn children even if you weren't religious. Now, it's true that many religious groups oppose abortion, but there are also millions of non-religious pro-life supporters too, including Secular Pro-Life, which is a large and growing movement of pro-life atheists and agnostics. Also, notice how none of the arguments or tactics in this course have relied on the Bible or other religious beliefs. Abortion is simply not a religious issue. It's a moral issue that all people of goodwill can agree on. So be strong and don't let people dismiss your pro-life views on the basis of religion. Affirm to them that you're not using religion to support your views. And if they still disagree, ask them to show you exactly how your arguments are based in religion. But what about people who claim you shouldn't force your particular moral views on the whole population? They might say something like, well, I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I wouldn't force that view on everyone. Who am I to tell other people what to do with their own bodies? You heard that before? The problem with this is that it's exactly what democratic law is supposed to do. For any particular issue, it takes one perspective or view, enshrines it in law, and expects everyone to follow it, even those who disagree with it. That's simply how our legal system works. So it's not wrong to promote your view or to try to get it enshrined in law. After all, that's precisely what pro-choice advocates want to do too. They want the law to reflect their pro-choice views. They want the law to allow for abortion and enforce that on everyone. Every law forces some particular moral view on everyone. So it's important that we reflect on the laws and only choose just laws that promote justice. A democracy only works when people stand behind their views, when they offer evidence and support, and try to convince others to agree. That's the heart of democracy. So this really isn't a good objection. Let's look at a fifth common objection. How does legalized abortion affect you? If you don't like abortions, just don't have one. Now here you might offer an analogy. You could say, well, suppose you and I were having this discussion in the mid-1800s, and I said to you, well, how does legalized slavery affect you? If you don't like enslaving people, just don't have slaves. Would you have a problem with that reasoning? They'll probably say something like, well, yeah, of course I'd have a problem because slavery is wrong and inhumane and nobody should be enslaved. If you think slavery is okay, then you're just wrong about it. But if they say that, then you can make the connection to abortion. You can say, hey, I agree with you, and that's exactly why I'm against abortion. Abortion is wrong and inhumane, and nobody should be killed in their mother's womb. It's not enough just for me not to have slaves or just for me not to abort my own children. slavery and abortion should be illegal for everyone, everywhere, because no human should have to suffer those atrocities. Here's a sixth and final objection. You're just a man, so you can't possibly understand the issue of abortion. You have no right to speak about it. Now, obviously, this objection only applies to half the population, so you probably won't hear this if you're a woman, but it's still a common objection, and here's how you might answer it. The best way to respond is to, again, use an analogy. You can say, you know what, you're right. I've never personally experienced abortion, so I can't speak from experience here. I don't know the pain and the struggle involved with that decision, but that doesn't prevent me from having an informed opinion about it. You know, I've never experienced rape or murder or embezzlement, but I can say with pretty high confidence that those things are wrong too. Likewise, most doctors haven't experienced 95% of the problems that they seek to cure, but they're still able to make judgments and take action. So I think that any person can objectively look at the facts about abortion and come to the realization that it's wrong, regardless if they're male or female or whether they've had an abortion themselves. So those are six of the most common objections that you'll hear. Now, if you have some more objections that come to mind that bother you, ones that we haven't discussed in this course, then please be sure to post them in our community area here at Claritas U, and I'd love to answer them for you. Or you might want to save them for the live Q&A, and we can chat about them live in real time. Next up, in the final lesson of our course, we're going to look at some final, more general tips and strategies for discussing abortion. In the previous lessons, we've already learned what to say and how to answer the best objections. But this last lesson will give you some pointers on the best ways to convey all of those truths. So stay tuned, and I'll see you there.